Welcome to the No Meh Movies Podcast. How many times have you heard a movie is all right? It's average. It's just okay. If you ask your friends if you should see it and they say, meh. I'm Davey Barris, and because we're still social distancing, unfortunately my partner Darren Cross is not here, but I'm here to bring you another bonus episode of the No Meh Movies Podcast and to decide once and for all if the movie I'm reviewing this week is good or bad, because on this show, there are no meh movies. Now, for a movie to qualify as meh, it must be between 40 and 60 on the tomato meter or 4 and 6 on IMDb. And the bonus episodes are freebies. They don't have to qualify necessarily as meh movies. It's just movies that I'm currently watching and I want to talk about. But actually, the movie this week, Dark Phoenix from 2019, the finale of the X-Men franchise under Fox, actually scores a 5.8 on IMDb, which qualifies it as a meh movie, and a 23% on Rotten Tomatoes, which will make those Rotten Tomatoes reviews interesting when we get to them. Now, spoiler warning, of course, spoiler warning for everything X-Men, X-Men movies, X-Men comics, X-Men cartoons, because the Dark Phoenix has appeared in all of them. In case it's been a while since you've seen it or you've never seen it before, and it is streaming for free on HBO right now, Dark Phoenix is about the X-Men going on a mission to save a space shuttle in danger. And they go up into space, and there they encounter the Phoenix Force. There they encounter an energy, a power, and Jean Grey, in her attempt to save the astronauts, actually absorbs this power. When they get back to Earth, Jean doesn't know what's happening to her. She's becoming more and more powerful, and she's becoming more and more angry about everything that's gone on into her life to this point. So she kind of snaps. There's also an alien race that is trying to convince her to just fully embrace the power, and the X-Men try to stop her. Some X-Men want to kill her. Some X-Men want to save her, and as Darren would say, shenanigans ensue. So It's impossible to, like, give a synopsis of this movie because it's very complicated. There's a lot of things going on. So now the question we ask of all our meh movies is, did the movie do what it was supposed to do? And obviously, this is simply listed as a superhero film. Now, if you want to just go on that broad level, then yes, the movie did what it was supposed to do. There were superheroes, there were superpowers, there was a villain, there was a fight, there was drama, there was tension. Yes, the movie did what it was supposed to do to be a superhero film. However, where everybody judges this, and the reason it ended up as a 23% on Rotten Tomatoes, is did the movie do what it was supposed to do as an adaptation of the Dark Phoenix story? And in that sense, I gotta agree with the other, doing the quick math, 77% of reviewers who said no. This movie did not do what it was supposed to do when it comes to adapting Dark Phoenix. And the thing you all know, the thing you've heard in multiple places, and I'm going to try not to be redundant of what you've heard everywhere else, is that this was a second attempt. This was a second attempt at adapting the Dark Phoenix storyline, and it was done by the same people. Simon Kinberg wrote the third X-Men movie, X-Men The Last Stand, which came out in 2006. So this is his second attempt at doing this. And did the movie do what it was supposed to do this time? No, again, it didn't. There are some really important things and really big things in that Dark Phoenix story, that original story that people love, that this movie leaves out, that they skip. And I'm going to get into it as successes and failures, but I'll just say that as far as the fun superhero stuff goes, yes, this movie does have that. As far as adapting Dark Phoenix, no, the movie does not. Now, the next category we talk about on this is, did the actors bring it, where we name our top performer from the movie? And like most superhero movies, it's a huge cast. I'm going to go as fast as I can. We got James McAvoy as Professor X. We got Michael Fassbender as Magneto. We got Jennifer Lawrence as Mystique. We got Nicholas Hoult as Beast. We got Sophie Turner as Jean Grey Phoenix. We've got Ty Sheridan as Cyclops. We got Alexandra Shipp as Storm. We got Evan Peters as Quicksilver. We got Cody Schmidt McPhee as Nightcrawler, and we got Jessica Chastain as Vuk, I think, and a few other people. So, from that cast, my top performer is going to be, and he'd probably be my top performer across any one of these X-Men movies, it's Michael Fassbender as Magneto. That guy is so intense in every scene he's in as Magneto. He's so damaged as this person who survived the Holocaust, who survived the Cuban Missile Crisis, who's, or maybe created the Cuban Missile Crisis, who knows. But he brings so much gravitas to the role of Magneto that he's easily the top performer in this movie. And, you know, the rest of these actors are all fine actors on their own. I there's something about this young cast that just has never felt right to me. James McAvoy as Professor Xavier has always been a fantastic casting choice. McAvoy and Fassbender are really the anchors of this rebooted franchise, and they deliver every time. Jennifer Lawrence is Mystique. I enjoyed her in the first few, in the last two, and people have said that she stopped trying. She hated the makeup that she was in. They barely did any makeup on her in this movie. That'd probably be a quick pick, but hey. One I really have a problem with is Nicholas Holt as Beast. Okay, so Beast appears in that third X-Men film. We finally get to see Beast in X-Men The Last Stand. And he's played by Kelsey Grammer. And a lot of people at the time were like, what? Frasier? You cast Frasier as Beast? Like, come on. How's that going to work? I'm telling you, Frasier as Beast is my favorite thing about X-Men Last Stand. He is so good as this politician, scientist, learned man who also is a superhuman, powerful beast. He commits to the whole character. He gets it. He gets a Beast in the cartoons, Beast in the comic books. He loves his books. He loves thinking things through. But when he needs to, you know, if this was the Hulk, we'd say Hulk out. And when he needs to Beast out and be the Beast, he delivers in all the action scenes in Last Stand. I loved him. Nicholas Holt, the way they've written this character since First Class, his whole not wanting to embrace being the Beast, being embarrassed of being the Beast. Sorry, that's not the Beast character. That's not the Beast character that I've seen in other iterations of the X-Men. And I've never gotten behind it. I think Nicholas Holt's a fine actor, but I never understood the way they wrote the character of Beast. It sucks all the fun out of him. I mean, the cartoons, he might be one of the most fun characters. In this, they suck all the fun out of Beast. All right, I guess we should talk about Sophie Turner, too, as Jean Grey, the main character. I think she was fine, but she was given that role of like, oh, I don't know what's happening to me. Oh, this might be too powerful for me to control. And it's not a very meaty role for an actress. Like, all they get to do is just kind of stand around and be, you know, perplexed, traumatized by their own power while everybody else is doing things around them. And eventually they, you know, overcome their power to, spoiler warning, save the day. But there's really not a lot of acting. There's not a lot of range involved in a role like that. So that's why she didn't get my top performer this week. All right. Moving on to successes and failures. Where does this movie succeed? Where does this movie fail? Clearly, I've already touched on a few things here. Where this movie fails is in accurately adapting the Dark Phoenix story. So in both iterations, in both iterations of the film franchise written by Simon Kinberg, Jean Grey has this dark side that Professor Xavier has repressed. He's put blocks in her mind, or he's, you know, withheld information from her and done things to hide this dark, powerful side of her. That is not the Dark Phoenix story. In the Dark Phoenix story, she heroically binds herself to a cosmic force known as the Phoenix Force. She basically sacrifices herself to bond with this thing, and that's how she becomes the Phoenix. how she becomes the Dark Phoenix is that the villains in X-Men, one of the villain groups is known as the Hellfire Club. We've seen the Hellfire Club. They were in X-Men First Class. Shaw and Emma Frost, these are Hellfire Club members. They have a psychic, a powerful, more of an illusionist. He manipulates your mind. He shows you things in the comic book. And he gets inside Jean Grey's mind and starts messing with her mind. Starts making her think that she's like a 200-year-old ancestor of herself. And like in these throwback scenes where they're like getting married, and it makes her believe she has this whole other life. And she doesn't know if present day is her real life or these illusions are her real life. And as he's using these illusions and gaining her trust and building this relationship through her through these illusions, he's also bringing out a devious side, bringing out an evil side, not knowing that the Phoenix Force is inside of her. It's these manipulations of her mind that unleash the full Phoenix Force in its evil form. And the Dark Phoenix is born. There is none of that in either of these movies. Nobody messes with her mind. Nobody manipulates her into this. Is she just supposedly has this dark side inside of her that's been there all along? That's not the story. Like, why do you think people got so frustrated the first time? And then you double down on it this time and you make Charles Xavier the bad guy, that he's the one that messed with her mind. That's not the Dark Phoenix story. The other thing that this movie leaves out from the adaptation of Dark Phoenix is that it's a cosmic story. They go into space. They got that part. At least they got them to outer space. And they do the mission to save the astronauts. But the Phoenix Force, there's this whole thing where she first encounters the Phoenix, and there's alien races involved, and there's this like power crystal that comes around once a generation, and she's got to go into it to stop it. And there's this whole thing that takes place on a spaceship, and the X-Men are all there. Not a spaceship, an alien ship. And it's all cut out. All the cosmic things are cut out. I think the final showdown, if I'm reading my stuff correctly, I think the final showdown in the Dark Phoenix story takes place on the moon, maybe. So all that cosmic stuff gets left out, and that's a fail. Sorry, that's a fail for this movie. Next, got another fail. Sorry, movie. Have another fail for you. The next thing about this movie is the character of Jean Grey. In the original trilogy, we kind of get two movies to fall in love with the character Jean Grey. Now, Simon Kinberg said that he originally intended this to be two movies. That there would be the Phoenix and then the Dark Phoenix. The first movie's purpose was to make the audience fall in love with Jean Grey, while the second movie's purpose was to break their hearts. That's from Chris Claremont, who wrote the original Dark Phoenix storyline. So, you know, that's the setup, right? You fall in love with Jean Grey, and then your heart's broken when these terrible things happen to her. But they combine it down into one movie, and the part that got cut is falling in love with a character. The most important part. How can I feel heartbroken about what's happening to a character if I don't fall in love with them and I don't care about them from something that happened previous? Now, the first X-Men trilogy actually does a good job of setting this up. Jean Grey is there from the beginning. We really get to learn her character. She plays an important role in both movies. The relationship between her and Cyclops, and kind of the love triangle between her, Cyclops, and Wolverine is explored. And so when she becomes the Phoenix in that movie, you at least care about it. Like, you at least care about her as a character. And I'll get to the final scene of that movie, but when what happens to her at the end of that movie happens, it's actually a pretty emotional scene. That's another fail of this movie. Like, Sophie Turner, I actually think the casting of Sophie Turner as Jean Grey is pretty good, but they never take the time in Apocalypse to really make us care about the character. And so when it comes around to this movie, there's just not enough time. We don't really get to see Cyclops' and Jean Grey's relationship evolve so that we care about their relationship, which is also in the comic book storyline a really important part of it. So all those details missing, it just makes it really hard to get the emotional impact that they were going for in this movie. All right, so I talked about what happened at the end of X-Men Last Stand. And if you don't remember, spoiler warning again. So the Phoenix is in full force. She's kind of destroying everything around her. And Wolverine, because of his healing factor, can approach her. And she asks Wolverine to kill her. She asks him to end it. You know, a little of Jean Grey sneaks through. And that's what Wolverine does. Sticks her with his claws. Ends the movie. That's something that actually kind of happens in the comic book. There is a scene in the comic book where she's losing control and she asks Wolverine to kill her, to end it. And he can't in the comic book. It continues. And that was a little piece that was picked and added, you know, and adapted into that first attempt at the movie. What I feel like happened is that little things from the comic book got picked here, got picked there. Some got put in X-Men Last Stand, and then some got put in this movie. Going to space, the spaceship rescue. Okay, that's something that got picked for this movie. Wolverine, you know, asking Wolverine to kill her. That's something that got picked for the last movie. I just feel like the way they picked and choose was very random. Like, it just... It felt like they knew they had to hit some things from the comic book. There were a few things that just had to be in there. And they just didn't pick the right ones. You know, they knew that the aliens had to be in there. There were alien races. The Phoenix Force did destroy an alien planet. But it was Jean Grey. It was Jean Grey in the Phoenix Force that destroyed that planet, that alien planet in the comic books. Here, it destroys that alien planet before it gets to Jean Grey. So little details like that, like, yes, they got them right and they put them in there, but it doesn't feel like they were focusing on the right things. All right. You're probably waiting for me to do a success for this movie. I will say a success for this movie is it was great to see some of the X-Men characters in full action scenes. We kind of get two big action scenes, and one, the X-Men are fighting each other when they're trying to get to Jean Grey. And then the second one is on the train, the climactic final scene where they're fighting the alien race, which I think is the Dabari. First off, the Dabari powers are never really explained. They can, like, resist gunshots, but not, like, really big gunshots. And I don't know. Their powers aren't fully explained. But as far as cannon fodder for X-Men to show off their powers, I gotta say, I did enjoy that. We got to see Nightcrawler in, like, full battle mode, which is something I kind of been waiting for. Like, Nightcrawler should be one of the coolest characters. And they've always kind of held him back. Like, they really aged him down from what they did in the first X-Men trilogy. And I didn't love that choice. They aged down everybody. This felt like the Teen Titans X-Men movies, to be honest. Where the first X-Men trilogy felt like the adult X-Men. Maybe it's because I was a teenager when those movies came out. You know, maybe that's my perception of it now. But seeing Nightcrawler go full battle mode was really cool. Seeing Cyclops use his blasts to take out some of these aliens was really cool. Beast let loose. Magneto used all his little tricks. Picked every little piece of metal in that train to fight with. The one character, I don't even know his name, he fights with the braids of his hair. This is the same thing they did in the Last Stand movie, where the one guy was like a porcupine. That was his skill. He had like little porcupine claws that would pop out of his skin. These might be actual characters from the comic books, but I gotta say, they're two of the silliest mutant powers you could think of. Like, how let down would you feel if you found out you had the mutant gene and your power was that you can use your dreadlocks as ropes, as whips? Like, how let down would you feel? Other people are flying, shooting lasers out of their eyes, controlling the weather, controlling people's minds. You can hit people with your dreadlocks. I feel so let down. All right. Other than that character, seeing these mutants use their powers in like a full battle mode was really cool, and I gotta give a success there. All right, so I've been ranting about this movie for a while now. That kind of covers, for these bonus episodes, I don't really have notes, I don't really have quick picks, but you know, these are just my stream of conscious thoughts on kind of this movie and how it made me feel and how I feel it succeeded and failed. I will say one, I know it's not the time for this, but one nitpick that I gotta share, and I didn't notice it until I was watching, I watched the CinemaSins video on this just to like see everything again. Not to take their ideas or run with any of their ideas, but I needed to see everything again really quickly. And it's a nice, like, sometimes if you've never seen a movie, CinemaSins is a really nice way to get a synopsis, a quick take of the movie. So they were making fun of the way the X-Jet takes off from the basketball court and the logistics of that. And that's not what it concerns me. That's not my nitpick. My nitpick is that when the basketball court opens, it splits right down the middle and opens up, and then the X-Jet flies out. However, the way a basketball court is designed, the basketball hoops are right down the middle. So the question is, where do you put that split? Do you put that split to the left of the basketball hoops or just to the right of the basketball hoops so that the hoops will move with the floor? What they decided to do when they animated this is that one hoop goes one way and one hoop goes the other way, which means if you're actually playing basketball on those courts, those hoops are not lined up. That court is actually staggered, which drives me insane for some reason. I know you would never notice it if you were actually playing basketball on that court. Like you run down to one end, you shoot, you run back to the other end, you're on defense. You probably wouldn't notice if they were like 4 inches off from each other, but just from like how a basketball court's supposed to be standpoint, that drove me crazy because they slowed it down. It was in slow motion. They were making fun of the scene in a completely different way, and that I could not focus on anything else except watching the two basketball hoops go opposite directions. So there is my nitpick. There's my quick pick for this movie. All right, let's take a look at what some of these Rotten Tomatoes reviewers said, and let's get some fresh opinions. Actually, they're mostly rotten opinions on this movie. Starting with the rotten reviews, Stephanie Burt from Slate.com, she says, her rotten review, the movie's weakness make more glaring the movie's hollowness where the storyline's feminism once was. So a big thing with this movie is that the ex-women kind of got to take the reins for this one, right? They got the lead for this one. It's about Jean Grey. The villain is a female character. And, you know, what's really been dominated by Magneto and Xavier, the men, has kind of now, you know, this is the women's turn to kind of lead the movie. Raven, too. I don't know. I guess Stephanie felt a hollowness to that storyline. I don't know. I felt its presence. I felt the presence of, you know, the women being in charge right now, you know, kind of recognizing that Jean Grey is the most powerful mutant. A woman is the most powerful mutant. The villain was such a boring character. I don't know how women would feel about it. Even, you know, again, I picked up a little thing as I was reviewing this, watching that CinemaSins video, but there's a moment where Storm kind of talks back to Professor X, and she kind of shoots down Professor X. He's like, look, Storm, you're kind of new to the team. You stay here. And she's like, no, I'm coming with you. I got your back, Cyclops. And he has nothing to say. So that was a little moment where, you know, again, the women kind of get to step to the front of this movie. So I didn't feel like the weaknesses of the movie in any sense actually hurt or made hollow the feminine storylines. Now, I will say that two like big themes that run throughout this. I will say that the feminine storylines are very like on the surface, right? Like the two big things is number one, like, oh, this woman can't control the power that, you know, we gotta take the power inside of her and hold it back, right? You know, Professor X put blocks in her mind to hold her down, kind of. And then the other one is kind of what Vuk is telling Jean Grey, where like, oh, you know, you can't let your emotions guide you, you know, oh, you don't be too emotional or you'll never be able to control this power. And then obviously the big line at the end is the emotions make me powerful, which is her big moment. So I will say that the storylines were, the two kind of feminist storylines were very on the surface. I don't think they really went deep enough to explore the fact that, you know, the men in her life were trying to hold her back and that, you know, people were saying that her emotions make her weak. So they could have explored that better, because we both know that both of those things are wrong. And they get there in the movie, but it's not explored very deeply. So moving on, another rotten review. Matthew Rosa from Salon.com. He says, if future filmmakers can learn these lessons from the travesty of Dark Phoenix, it won't have been a total waste. I think that's a little unfair. I mean, you cannot blame the movie, the filmmakers, the actors for everything that the studio did behind the scenes. I mean, before this movie is released, Fox is bought by Disney. They push back the release date. They set it like 2 months after Avengers Endgame comes out. They don't give it any kind of marketing push. There were a lot of things that worked against this movie. Now, there were still plenty of things that went wrong in the movie, but I don't think you can say that the travesty of Dark Phoenix is a lesson that other filmmakers can learn. I think there's some lessons in here about adapting and adapting storylines and understanding what it is in these comic books that people are so attached to. It's not the sparkly special effects around Jean Grey, I can tell you that much. It's about the emotional storylines that go into these things. So that's the lesson they can learn there. But I don't know if Dark Phoenix is really teaching any future filmmakers any lessons. I don't know about that one. All right, let's take a look at one of the fresh reviews. Okay, Mick LaSalle from the San Francisco Chronicle. He really liked it. His fresh review, at all points in the story, Turner is focused on the character's mental state, on her pain, anger, confusion, grief, and terror. It makes for a different kind of X-Men movie, one of the better ones. Mick, I mean, Sophie Turner does a decent job, but I gotta say that Sansa Stark, her other giant pop culture character, does a much better job of dealing with a character's mental state, pain, anger, confusion, grief, and terror. Sansa Stark goes through some shit in Game of Thrones, and Sophie Turner does a much better job in that of, like, we know how far her range can go. We know what she can do as an actress from that. And she doesn't come anywhere close to that range in this movie. Aside from the scene where she's, like, crying, trying to wipe the blood off her shirt, which any review, honest trailer, CinemaSins, anything you see will point out the fact that she never had any blood on her shirt, so why is she wiping blood off her shirt? That's really the most emotional she gets in the entire movie. The rest of the movie, she's just kind of confused by what's happening to her and frustrated by what's happening to her. So, no, I don't think that she reaches the full emotional range that we know she can as an actress. All right. That is enough of the Rotten Tomatoes reviewers. It is time for me to pitch a sequel. And we all know that with Disney buying Fox and now having the rights to the X-Men franchise, Kevin Feige's already kind of stated that, you know, they're going to roll, or Bob Iger has said that they're going to roll the X-Men into the MCU somehow. Kevin Feige said it's going to take a while. You know, these things take a long time. These things are planned out pretty far. So what am I going to pitch as a sequel? The way I see it, there's a lot of X-Men versus Avengers crossovers and stuff like that where they both show up to deal with a situation. I don't think that's the right way to go. Now, I would not trust Simon Kinberg to write this, okay? In no way. But I trust Kevin Feige to do this. The way I see that you move on from this is with the House of M storyline from the comic books. Now, I just did a quick refresher on it. But basically, it all ties around Scarlet Witch. And it just so happens that on Disney Plus, they have a Scarlet Witch TV show coming out. One where different realities are happening. Now, what happens in the House of M is that basically Scarlet Witch has kind of a mental break. And some Avengers die in the process. And then she starts, like, creating these realities and, like, creates two children. And, you know, they show us in the trailer for Scarlet Witch and Vision's WandaVision, the TV show on Disney Plus, that like they're going to be jumping around all these different genres, and in one looks like a sitcom where they're like a family. And so clearly she's going to be like seeing different things. But in House of M, she's not just seeing these things, she's creating them. Every time she sees something different, she's creating a new reality for the entire world. And eventually they decide that the only way to stop her is to kill her. And her brother, Quicksilver, tells her, like, basically warns her that this is going to happen. And says the only way to stop this is to make everyone happy. Give everybody what they want. And so they make everybody's dreams come true. Like, Peter Parker has a son and is married to Gwen Stacy. And Uncle Ben is alive. And Wolverine is part a S.H.I.E.L.D. agent and stuff like that. Like, so all this crazy stuff becomes reality in the world. And then they all have to kind of work to unravel this. I'm not going to go much deeper into the House of M storyline, but it would be a great way to start pulling X-Men characters into this. Because the key then, after everybody has what they want, they still try to kill Scarlet Witch. And so she decides no more mutants. And basically strips most of the mutants of their mutant powers. So it'd be a great way to bring in Michael Fassbender as Magneto. It'd be a great way to bring in... Now, here's the tough part, because Quicksilver has existed in both franchises. But it would be a way, if you wanted... I think it's Evan Peters. If you wanted Evan Peters to stay as Quicksilver, this could be a way to do it. Like, she would be a little confused. Like, that's not the Quicksilver I remember. But then she's creating different realities, so this could be her brother. If you wanted to go back to the other Quicksilver, you could go back to the other Quicksilver. It would be an interesting way to bring him in. You could bring in McAvoy as Professor X, or you could start recasting some of these characters, and especially Wolverine, because this is a new reality. So if you want to start bringing in new actors to play some of these roles, this is your opportunity to do it, because she's creating new realities. Then you could slowly bring these characters in. And you can kind of run through the House of M storyline, which is it sounds like a pretty cool storyline. A lot of stuff happens. You get Avengers, you get X-Men, you get all sorts of heroes. You get She-Hulk, you get Spider-Man. There's a lot of fun stuff happening there. So that's my sequel that I'm pitching. If I were Kevin Feige, that's what I would do. I would use WandaVision as a jumping off point, lead me into the House of M storyline, and then I could start bringing in X-Men characters into the MCU and into the world. That's the sequel I would pitch, and now it is time for quick picks. And like I said, I wasn't taking notes during this movie. I don't have many quick picks to really go over. I will say that the one thing, and maybe this was a fail, maybe this should have been in successes and fails, the one problem I've had with really like the last three X-Men movies is that I just never see Magneto as the villain I think he's supposed to be. I think in the comic books, Magneto is a actual villain. And in these movies, he's like the most sympathetic character in all of these movies. I mean, he survives the freaking Holocaust. If he doesn't become a sympathetic character right from that moment, I don't know how you can not feel that way about him. Then he tries to leave the world, and he tries to, you know, start a family and just hide and just be a dad, and that gets taken away from him. So again, how do you not feel sympathy for him? Then he tries to create a home for mutants, like a refugee camp, which does not get explored enough, but I think it's a thing in the comic books that, again, gets touched on but never really explored in this movie. And again, that gets taken away from him. So how do you just not feel for the character of Magneto when he's supposed to be a villain? He's supposed to be one of the biggest villains in the X-Men universe. And they've made him this lovable character, which just, it makes such a strange relationship then with Charles Xavier. Like, they're like, I'm going to stop you. But no, they're actually too good of friends in these movies. I kind of like what they did with Ian McKellen in the first trilogy of X-Men movies. You did understand that at one time him and Charles were friends, and you did understand that he was the villain. I think they went too far in making Magneto a sympathetic character here, because I'm telling you, throughout these movies, I'm rooting for him more often than I'm not. So that's my nitpick of this entire new, first class of X-Men movies that we've seen, and including this one. All right, that's what I got for quick picks. Would you guys like a little trivia going out? I'm sure there's some fun facts about this movie. Around the 24-minute mark, the mutant singing during the mutant school party is Allison Blair, a.k.a. Dazzler, a mutant from the comics who can change sound into light, a talent she uses to further her pop singing career. I will tell you that Dazzler is a character in the Dark Phoenix storyline. Cyclops and Jean Grey actually go to a club, on a date night, and they go to a club where Dazzler is performing. And that's one of the times when Dark Phoenix is attacked by the guy who can control her mind. So that's in the fun nod. I'm glad it snuck something like that in there. It's the first X-Men film not to feature Wolverine in any capacity. In Deadpool 2, he's seen briefly from unused footage from X-Men Origins Wolverine. The film was originally set to have a smaller budget due to the box office underperformance of X-Men Apocalypse. And executives even went as far as to plan to release the film entirely to home video and streaming. The film was ultimately released in theaters and lost the studio almost $120 million. I'm guessing... I don't know if Fox lost that money or if Disney lost that money, but I'm guessing they probably would have preferred to just throw it out. Well, they didn't have Disney Plus. It wasn't even a thing. I guess they could have done like what they're doing with New Mutants and just hold it and just hold it and just hold it. And eventually put it on Disney Plus. All right, and this will be my last trivia fact for the day. Ty Sheridan, who played Cyclops, admitted shortly before the film's release that he wore a muscle suit throughout production instead of working out. Hey, you know what? It's movie magic. You gotta do what you gotta do sometimes. All right, that does it for trivia. It is time for me to decide once and for all. Dark Phoenix, is it a good movie? Is it a bad movie? And I'm guessing from the way I've been talking this entire time, you've pretty much figured out by now that I agree with most of the critics on Rotten Tomatoes that this is a bad movie. I kind of knew it was a bad movie going in. I just heard so much about it, but it's one of those things where I would go to all the X-Men movies in the theater. I've been watching these things since I was in high school, and I had to see how technically it was going to end for the Fox franchise. So as soon as it came on HBO, I was there. I was ready to watch it. And yeah, I just, as this X-Men, I love First Class. Days of Future Past was really cool. But again, it centered around Wolverine kind of and had some of the older X-Men characters in it. So yeah, as far as Apocalypse in this movie goes, they lost me. I feel like they lost everyone. Clearly this movie lost $120 million because it went to theaters and nobody went to see it because no one really cared anymore. So there were some decent things in it. There were some decent ideas, and it was a decent attempt at trying to adapt the Dark Phoenix storyline. Like, at least they got a tiny bit of cosmic stuff in there. Like, it came from outer space. At least they got that part of it. But in the end, they really failed to adapt that storyline again. And they just missed so many of the emotional and human beats that really made that storyline great. And the things that Jean Grey has to do to kind of deal with the Phoenix Force. So that's my decision. Sorry, it's a bad movie. But that's why we do the show. Thanks for listening, everybody. Remember, me and Darren are working on a new show, so stay tuned for that. You're probably just going to keep getting bonus episodes until me and Darren get that new show rolling, and then could dive back into more meh movies. Thanks for subscribing, everyone. Please rate and review the show on whatever podcasting app you are listening on. You can follow us on Twitter at No Meh Movies, and you can follow me on Twitter at Davey Barris, especially for more information on that new sports movie podcast show that we're going to be doing. Thanks for supporting the show, and the next time your friends ask about a movie, take a stance and tell them if the movie is good or bad, because on this show, there are no meh movies. A sympathetic character right from that moment, I don't know who, I don't know how you cannot feel that way about him.